I've always had the innate ability to read people's minds, to look into people's minds. Mm-hmm. Not in the sense of if you're thinking a thought, I'm going to tell you every thought you're thinking of.
Of course.
It's there are certain vibrations, certain emanations that your subconscious mind gives off differently than your unconscious, differently than your conscious, differently than your heart, and I could pick up on those vibrations and read them. Mm-hmm. It translates into language for me. And so as a kid, that caused me a lot of challenge.
Welcome to the Superhero Academy podcast. I'm your host, Archangelo. Ladies and gentlemen, superheroes of the world, maybe mystics? Well, we've got somebody here today that I just haven't seen in forever. But somebody who I've always found was just a beautiful soul. So much energy, so much love, so much compassion, so much just flow. I've always been fascinated with your skill. I've always been fascinated with what you do, the storytelling you do, the art of what you do. And you've expanded, you've grown, you've shape-shifted in 1,001 different ways. It's been, like you said, lifetimes since we've seen each other, probably going back at least 5 years.
Yep.
David Lyon, thank you so much for being here in the podcast. Thank you so much for, showing up the way you do. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, man. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm excited.
Yeah. So, I mean, we were about to go into a story and then we're like, okay, wait, let's sit down and talk. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on. But before I go into the story, I want to tell the backstory of like how I kind of met you. Because at the time, you were kind of working in what I would consider to be the magic realm, right?
Entertainment.
Yep. Entertainment. Showmanship around hypnotism, around kind of entertaining a crowd of people close up in a way that makes them feel mystified, essentially, right? And I think there's a lot of different energy and all kinds of different components that flow with what magic represents. Mm. And I think there's a lot of mysticism around it, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of misconceptions, and there's lots of really beautiful things that come with that. And I think what I love about who you are is that you're actually kind of embodying both of them, right? Both the showmanship of like magic from the perspective of misdirection, from the perspective of, you know, what street magic can entail. And I think you embody like very powerfully real life magic and the understanding of like, you know, what you, through your thoughts, your intentions, through your heart, through your energy, you attract and create the world that around you.
Absolutely.
Right. And you have this kind of power that we all have access to, but that you're just really beautifully in tune with and you have an intuition around.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so I was always fascinated with the work that you were doing in terms of magic and just even street, like up close magic and hypnotism. I always find that fascinating because it's always the question that other people ask, which is hypnotism real? Like, what do you actually think about it? You know what I mean? So I would love for you to tell me a little bit about that journey. Tell me a little bit about hypnotism and then talk to me and then let's get to that story that we're about to dive into earlier.
Yeah, for sure. So you want to know about hypnotism specifically?
Well, I want to hear a little bit of it, your journey getting to hypnotism, your journey getting into magic, and then talk to me about hypnotism because I mean, look, you've gone viral multiple times over on YouTube, right? You've definitely known for it in some way, shape, or form, but it's no longer really well. It's not your focus anymore. It seems
correct.
So just tell me about your story.
Yeah, for sure, man. You know, it really came from a place of when I was 16 years old. You know, I was in high school. I was a very insecure kid. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very heavily psychologically bullied for not being black enough compared to the other black kids. I was in a predominantly black school. Mm-hmm. So I was going through a lot of issues at the time, just trying to fit in and trying to connect with people. And I saw that all the people who had friends who were popular, they all had a thing, right? They were either a basketball player or a rapper. They just had this thing. Mm. And so I was trying to find my thing. And so I tried a bunch of different things. You know, I tried the basketball. I tried rapping and dancing. And it definitely wasn't it wasn't where I excelled. Mm-hmm. And right when I was at the moment thinking that maybe I don't have a thing, I remember I was in my mom's basement living in the West Island of Montreal. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, my mom calls down and she's just like, David, turn on the TV. You got to see this magician. There's this guy named David Blaine. You have to see him. And I was like, I don't know. I don't want to see him. He's probably going to just try and copy David Copperfield. Mm. And she's like, no, you don't understand. He's doing street magic. And I'd never heard of street magic before.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning. It's I turned on the TV. I saw Blaine performing for Tyra Banks and a few other people. Mm. And it just blew me away how he was able to connect with people and make them feel good just using everyday objects. You know, it wasn't like smokes and mirrors like David Copperfield. It felt attainable.
Mm.
And so that's how it started for me, was wanting to be like David Blaine. And then, of course, you know, synchronicity took over and I ended up becoming a magician. And then that evolved into me becoming a mentalist and learning mind reading and stuff and starting a YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, as I got the ball rolling and I started to get good at what I did, I got the attention of one of David Blaine's teachers, where I had a couple of videos on my YouTube channel. And at the time, this is when YouTube first came out.
Yeah.
So at the time, I just thought YouTube was a place to store your videos. I didn't realize other people were going to be able to see it.
And like pay attention and actually watch it.
Right. You know, I didn't think people were going to find it or anything like that. So I was just posting videos that I would love to see. That was my inspiration. I wanted to create these art pieces of magic that were timeless that I would love to watch.
Yeah.
And it just turned out that as I posted things that I loved, other people loved it and it started to go viral. And one of Blaine's teachers, a man named Jay Noblezada, reached out to me in 2008 and asked me to fly out to Vegas to excel as a magician and to learn new skills. And he mentioned that at the training, it wasn't just going to be about magic and mentalism, but there was also a surprise guest. There were two surprise guests who were master hypnotists.
Oh.
And they were the world's fastest hypnotists on top of it.
Okay.
And, you know, I had never thought I was going to be a magician or anything like that growing up, but I always had this fascination with hypnosis as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was just something about it that was so mysterious. And so when I had the opportunity to learn it, of course, I just wanted to jump on it. And so the way I got into hypnosis is I literally got hypnotized by a 12-year-old boy.
Mm.
When I was in Las Vegas, I get there and there's a father and son. Han Wong is the father. Gordon Fang Wong is the son. He was a 12-year-old kid looking like a little Bruce Lee.
The prodigy.
Yeah, he's
straight up prodigy.
Straight up prodigy, man. Yeah. You know, and I remember on the first day I saw him, you know, because Jay Noblezada was just like, you see that kid? That kid's one of the best hypnotists in the world. So I go up to him talking to him like he's a kid, you know? So I was 21 at the time. And I went up to him, I'm like, hey, man, I'm like, I hear you're one of the best hypnotists in the world. And he just looks me dead in my eye and he's just like, I am the best. And it was just a pure confidence that set chills down my spine.
Wow.
And so I told him, I'm like, I would love to get hypnotized and I don't think it'll work on me because my mind's too strong. I said all the things that everyone says.
Yep.
And then sure enough, on the day when it came time for that practice, I got called in front of the group of a room full of like 30 magicians in the seminar room. And the kid, Gordon, comes up to me and he was just like, will you listen to all my instructions? I'm like, sure, kid. Takes my hand, tells me to take a deep breath in, pulls my arm, says sleep, and I just go out.
Wow.
And it was that quick. And what most blew me away about that experience is that, you know, they also took away my fear of spiders. I was arachnophobic.
Mm-hmm.
Did that within like 30 seconds.
Wow.
But what most blew me away was the experience of hypnosis. And also when they taught us the technique, it was called the zap technique.
Mm-hmm.
When they taught us the zap technique, I went and started practicing it right away. And for some reason, it came super easily to me. And every single person who I went up to, it was working. And I couldn't understand for the life of me, why is this working? Right? Like, why is it I could go up to you, look at you a certain way, pull your arm, say sleep, and now I could snap my fingers and have you believe I'm Drake? Right? Why is that? And so that curiosity ended up becoming my obsession to discover the why of hypnosis and leading me towards mysticism and all kinds of other things.
So, but why is that? I know that's a huge answer and there's, you know, it's not easy to just encapsulate, but I mean, for those who are, cause look, I think there's a ton of skeptics.
Yep.
There's a ton of people who are going to listen to this and be like, yeah, okay. And plant. Right?
Yep.
Like that's it. That is what it is. And and that does exist in the world of magic and hypnotism. There are plants. There are things that are kind of staged in some way, shape, or form.
Yes.
And certain magicians have done a disservice of sorts, if you want to see it that way,
yep,
to the art.
Yep.
But there is an art to it.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, demystify the hypnotism for me for a second.
Yeah.
Like how do you think that's working? What is happening when somebody is saying or essentially entering into a suggestible state?
Essentially, from my perspective, essentially what's happening is we're hacking into the same part of your brain that you use when you sleep and you dream at night.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when you're sleeping and you're dreaming at night, you're not questioning anything that's happening in your reality, whether there's monsters, whether your feet are stuck, whether things are switching left, right, and center. You're just unconsciously responding to things happening in your reality.
Yep.
Hypnosis is hacking into that part of your brain that does that and bringing it to the forefront.
Okay.
So it's something that already exists in your brain. It's just about tapping into it.
Yeah. It's like finding an existing doorway or pathway and then just kind of short-circuiting the normal pathway, which is kind of the rational, let's say, waking mind and rational in quote-unquotes there, but kind of subverting and then going through this kind of back door.
Exactly. Yeah. There's just ways of calling it forth. You know, so you could use speed. You know, the way that I was taught by Han Wang was confuse the mind, shock the body.
Mm.
That was the principle. Confuse the mind, shock the body. Get you into some sort of confusion and then give you a shock by jerking your arm or something like that.
Yeah.
But you could also use relaxation. You could use a plethora of different techniques and practices. Ultimately, what you want to do is you want to stimulate that part of the mind that is the dreamer. Yeah. And bring it to the forefront. Ultimately, that's what you're doing.
Amazing. Yeah. And so you discover this skill. You start making YouTube videos. You make more YouTube videos. You eventually make a YouTube video with Drake, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Goes viral. And now all of a sudden you're on this path where this is what you do. This is your job. Like, and this is amazing. Like look, this podcast is about interviewing entrepreneurs, creatives, influencers, you know, freelancers of all kinds and people who have interesting jobs and are amazing at what they do. And I think, I honestly believe magician and being a magician and anything to do with that, because I think there's so many layers to that, is a form of storytelling. It's a form of art that is just fascinating to me.
Right.
But I love that that became like your full-time gig. Like this is what you were going around doing shows, like making, like entertaining people.
Yeah, that happened very naturally, you know, because when I found magic and hypnosis and all those things, or just going back to the start, when I found magic, I wasn't looking for my purpose. I wasn't looking for a career. Yeah. I was looking for friends.
Mm.
That's all I was looking for. And it just so happened that as I would start performing for people and act on my passion and act on my excitement and joy, opportunities came into my reality. All of a sudden, people wanted to film me. People wanted to hire me. TV shows wanted me. And so I just found myself in this flow where I realized that I don't actually need to work very hard in life or push. I could just have fun and passion my way through life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I found myself in that flow and never really looked back.
Yeah, well, I would guess that you would kind of call that living magic.
Correct.
Which is a plug for your brand. Yes. And everything you're doing, obviously. Yeah, I'm just going to pull up the website here. So for those who are, you know, we're talking about YouTube, he's got a lot of views. He got a lot of views over time. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you made a ton of YouTube videos. You've gone to figure some of the stuff out. And then you come out with, well, at the time when I met you, you were kind of, I guess your brand was more Lionism.
Yes.
And around that kind of vein. Now it's upgraded to Living Magic because, well, where you are today is, it's like, how do I even describe what it's like you're channeling.
Yeah.
You're essentially bringing forward truth that is coming to you and through you and bringing that out into and kind of demystifying it and kind of turning it into words that people like everyday people can hear and learn and receive and interpret for themselves in their own life.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, what was kind of amazing about the path is that, you know, I started off as an illusionist, as an entertainer. But the synchronicity of my life led me to discovering the real magic within, which was, I guess, kind of the point all along. Mm-hmm. And that's what led to the channeling and the spiritual gifts and all that other sort of thing that is now Living Magic. And so that's why I'm so obsessed with it, because that's what I was looking for. When I first saw David Blaine on TV, I didn't know it was tricks.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know if it was all tricks, if it was real. When I saw him bite a quarter in half and spit it back whole, I'm like, I want to know how to do that. I don't know what that magic power is, but I want to know how to do that.
Yeah.
And so that's what I was looking for from the start, is I was inspired by real magic. So when I discovered that a lot of it was illusion, what a lot of magicians do is they go, oh, it's all illusion. But that didn't happen to me. You know,
I never lost like the real faith behind the essence of it.
Not at all, you know, because it's in the entertainment illusion world, they ridicule things like psychics and mystics and things like that.
Yep.
Because they can mimic psychic ability through trickery.
Yes.
They assume that that's how all psychics do their thing, which is a logical thought. But my thought was, I'm like, okay, well, even if a lot of them do it through trickery, they must have gotten the idea from something authentic.
Mm.
That was always my thought. And so that's what kind of kept that feeling alive to keep looking and stay open, even though I was skeptical, mm-hmm. even though I, you know, wasn't sure about certain things, I was open.
Yeah.
And that's what led to, you know, the next chapter.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, it's funny because if you look at the career of many magicians, and I'll speak to David Blaine because we've brought him up already. I would say now he's doing real magic in some ways.
Absolutely.
Like, quite literally. I mean, his latest stunt was going up in a balloon ride, and I love the idea of just like that. We've all had the thought of like, what if I held on to a bunch of balloons and I just floated up into the sky? I love that he did that and live streamed the whole thing, which is amazing. But he's pulled off some serious stunts.
Yeah, he's next level.
And I say stunt because it's a mix between, it really is the perfect intersect between high level storytelling and marketing. Like, and I say marketing because it's engineered to capture your attention and be like, what? He did what? You know what I mean? It's engineered for that. And at the exact same time, pushing the limits of physical reality to levels that are insane. I mean, the amount of time he's held his breath or the certain things that he's done, like even just mastering, you know, the skill of like, he swallows frogs or swallows a bunch of water and kerosene and then regurgitates that out and then puts out a fire. Because he's inspired by a magician that actually did that.
Yep.
There's a real thing. There's no magic trick to that. Like the magic, well, I mean, there is in the sense that the magic trick is years of practicing this and like learning a skill set that is very difficult to do. And it's taking control of parts of your mind or your body
yep.
that normally we don't control.
Yeah, he's taking it to a whole other level. Like I will always give Blaine the props of he's the king of magic.
Yeah.
I love Blaine.
Would you say he's really the king, like the number one magician? If you had to see one magician in the world, he's number one?
I call him the king of magic because of how he embodies the magician archetype.
Mm.
Not because he's the best skilled magician.
That's fair.
There are many magicians who are way more skilled than him, and he would even say that.
I agree.
You know, but in the way that he embodies that mystery and that archetype and just in, and he, you know, he's the one who popularized street magic.
Yeah.
So I give him that credit. I give him that props. I'm like, you're the king.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
He really is. So before we get to that quick story where how you and I meet, cause I was fascinated when I met you, I thought you had amazing skills. You mentioned something there that I think is really important, which is I've been talking a little bit about recently is like kind of different archetypes that we play. Mm. And one of the archetypes is the magician, mm-hmm. right? Like, so I've recently embodied the archetype of the lover. It's the kind of like the fourth archetype that I feel I've now gone through. I found my magician first, actually.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. That was my first kind of archetype where I realized I can make something out of nothing, essentially, that I can create from absolutely nowhere. And I could just dream something and make it reality. It was the first thing that I kind of discovered in myself. And it was aided by psychedelics in some ways and lots of weed. But I think I was aided by my curiosity. I was always there in some way. Mm-hmm. But I just had this leap of faith in certain moments in really through my career that it just all of a sudden I was running an indoor skate park and doing all these things that were like made no sense for my age and for anything that was really happening. Mm-hmm. But I found that. And then I moved through elements of my warrior archetype. My king archetype was kind of the growth of Superhero Academy and the different things there. So the warrior was starting Valhalla and starting the farm and saying like, I want to build the revolution and change the world and everything needs to fall upon me and I need to fight the system.
Yep.
Then it was like the more egoic side of being the king archetype of sorts. And then recently I found the lover archetype. Mm. Now, yeah, that for me is now scaled into or looks like, what does it look like to put intimacy first in every scenario?
Mm.
And I feel like I've kind of created a balance between those different archetypes. I would imagine the magician archetype or that kind of side of you is obviously really well developed. I mean, I know it is.
Absolutely.
If somebody's listening to this and they don't know what we're talking about, how would you explain a magician archetype? Like, what does that look like or feel like? Because I think a lot of what you're talking about speaks to that.
You know, the honest answer is I don't know. Because I'm not big into the whole archetype world. I'm aware of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't want to talk like I know something that I don't.
Sure.
With that said, you know, for me, the magician archetype is all about possibility. It's all about mysticism. It's all about making something out of nothing and creativity and, you know, seeing problems as opportunities and things of that nature. You know, it's going the path less traveled.
Yep.
You know, when 99% of the world's going this way and you get that intuition to go that way, that's the magician.
Mm.
That's how I see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, magic has unfolded in our journey and somehow. So tell me the story of the day that we met, because I remember the day we met, which was basically I was giving a marketing workshop on basically how to build movements and launch. We were talking kind of the original idea was there was a Kickstarter that was going to go on, or a crowdfunding campaign that some people wanted to put together. Mm-hmm. It was just general needs that people had of like reaching more people. And I had been fortunate enough to have channeled my own inner magician and warrior to be able to kind of make that kind of stuff happen in my own life. I think there's an interesting story that you were going to start it down. So I would love to hear it.
Yeah, for sure. I guess
I don't even know the story.
Yeah. I guess before going into that story, I should give some context so that it makes sense for the viewers.
Sure.
How do I give this? So, you know, when I came into this life, this incarnation, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. I came in very awake, very clear. You know, I came in with my third eye open, not knowing that was the case. Mm-hmm. And so, but just to put it in a very simple language, I just always felt very clear as a kid. There was, you know, my mom would share her problems with me from a young age, and I would channel for her, not, you know, giving her perspective, in other words.
Yep.
And I was just the kind of kid who could see certain things that other people couldn't see and feel things that other people couldn't feel, you know, angels, things like that. And eventually I started to lose touch with that. Mm. And one thing that's always remained intact with me and you could ask me questions on this, as I'm sure you'll have questions, but I've always had the innate ability to read people's minds, to look into people's minds. Mm-hmm. Not in the sense of if you're thinking a thought, I'm going to tell you every thought you're thinking of.
Of course.
It's there are certain vibrations, certain emanations that your subconscious mind gives off differently than your unconscious, differently than your conscious, differently mm-hmm. than your heart. And I could pick up on those vibrations and read them. Mm-hmm. It translates into language for me. And so as a kid, that caused me a lot of challenge, one, because I didn't know that I was uniquely doing it compared to my surroundings, mm-hmm. and two, just because, you know, imagine, you know, I was a bit of a different kid. I wasn't like playing sports and doing the things like most kids doing. I like to be by myself playing in my imaginary world, mm-hmm. and I would often have the experience where people would come up to me, you know, family members, and they'd be like, oh, what are you doing there, David? But I could hear their mind say, what's wrong with you, David? Like, what are you doing?
Mm.
And I kept having this experience where people would come up to me seemingly wanting to be nice and like, oh, what are you doing? But there was this judgment I would hear in their mind. And after a while of hearing so many people judging me, seeing this problem inside of me as if something's wrong, it made me start to look for a problem that was never there. Mm. And that kind of began this kind of cycle of suffering of like, why is everyone judging me or thinking I'm weird?
Okay.
And it wasn't until I was 25 years old where I met my first psychic, mm-hmm. which I didn't believe in at the time. I was just like, all right, I'll try it out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm not expecting anything. And it was a woman named Micheline here in Côte Saint-Luc, Montreal. Mm-hmm. She absolutely blew me away. And, you know, I was tough. Like, I gave her nothing. I didn't want, you know, I was an illusionist at the time, too. So I was looking for trickery.
You're looking for trickery, yes.
I'm looking
and
for that stuff.
Specially trained to figure it out.
I'm specially trained for cold reading, for trickery.
For everything.
You can't do it to me.
Yeah.
And she blew me away. You know, the first sentence out of her mouth to me was, your mom was abandoned by her birth parents and adopted into a Jewish family, and your dad left your life when you were 3 years old. Like, you don't look at a black man and say you're Jewish, right? That's not a cold read.
That's not a cold. I agree with you. That's a strong read. If you guess that fully, that's no, you're definitely informed in a different way.
Informed in a different way. And that was the first sentence out of her mouth for an hour of talking that she just told me about all kinds of things that blew me away, super resonated. And at some point she had said something to me. She's just like, by the way, make sure you don't use your mind reading abilities for manipulation, because that's how you got killed in a past life.
Ooh.
And I was just like, what mind reading abilities? And she's just like, well, you could see into people's minds. And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, you do realize not everyone could do that. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, whoa, because I had no idea. It was never talked about. No one ever told me this. And so in that moment, she just made sense of so much of my life. Because I was able to look back and be like, oh, that's why that was happening. Mm. And it was in that moment that my pain, one of my greatest pains, became a blessing and a gift. because she enlightened me to the idea of like, no, you could use this to help people. Mm-hmm. There are people who are stuck and you could see things in their mind and you could very easily help them align to their higher and better selves. Mm-hmm. And so that changed a lot for me. And from that point forward, from 25 forward, that's when certain things unfolded, certain synchronicities. I met certain people who would serve as catalysts to more of my gifts awakening, my clairvoyant gifts and channeling and seeing spirit guides and all those things.
Yep.
So now along that path, at one point in 2012, I was a teacher at a high school, at Mile End High School, and which is a story in and of itself because I have no degree.
Magic.
Magic. It's living magic.
That's the easiest way to say it.
So I'm teaching at this high school,
mm-hmm.
and one of my co-teachers one day, she's just like, she hands me this printout of papers, and she's just like, I feel like you would like this. And I take it, and I read it, and I'm like, it says, the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. And I didn't know how it was pronounced at the time. T-H-O-T-H. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, who or what is Thoth? And she's just like, oh, that's the god of magic and wisdom. And I'm like, ooh, I like both those things.
Yeah, totally.
So I took it home, and I think I read maybe 2-3 chapters of it. I'm like, this is dope. This is amazing. Great. Mm-hmm. Activating, sure. But didn't think much of it, you know? I put it aside and didn't think much.
And what's the backstory of the mysticism behind that? Like what, like for example, Valhalla, right? Our farm is called Valhalla. It's based on Norse mythology, essentially. What's the backstory of Thoth? Is it going back to like Egypt?
Yes, goes back to ancient Egypt, to Atlantis.
Okay.
Yeah, he was known as one of the kings of Atlantis and the builder of the Great Pyramids, the one to give us language and math and science. He was the scribe of the gods.
Okay.
And so I read these Emerald Tablets, thought it was cool, but didn't really think much of it. I'm like, nice, cool. So then a week later, after I get the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, it happened to be my birthday, and I wanted to get a cat. That's what I wanted for my birthday.
Because mm-hmm.
I had to give mine away when I was 6 years old because my brother was born and he was allergic.
Ah.
It's one of those.
Yeah.
So I really just wanted a cat. And I happened to mention that to a friend of mine. And she's like, oh, wait. She's like, don't get a cat. My cat just had kittens. You have to take one of my cats. I'm like, cool. Sure. Send me a picture. She sends me a picture of like, I don't know, 5-6 different cats. And one of them really stands out to me. I'm like, oh, who's that cat? And she's like, oh, that's Thoth.
Amazing.
I was like, what? What are the chances? First of all, who names their cat Thoth?
Yeah. Nobody.
Nobody.
Yeah.
And I just heard this name for the first time a week ago, and now there's a cat that calls to me named Thoth.
It always happens, right? You learn a new word, and all of a sudden it's in your reality.
Yes.
It's just like a weird... Anyway, I say weird, but that's magic. That's life magic happening over and over and over again. But yeah, anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So obviously I end up getting this cat.
Clearly.
And what I didn't know at the time was that this was... Thoth, so it's pronounced Thoth. So this was Thoth's way of leaving a breadcrumb trail for me, letting me know of what was going to be happening in my life. Started with the tablets, then became my cat, and my cat was very much my teacher.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that when I first got her, we didn't get along. You know, because it was because of me. I was still very controlling, and I had anger issues, and I had different things inside of me. So in order to harmonize and get along with my cat, I had to learn, like, let's just say she was vibrating over here. I had to learn to loosen up and be less controlling and less angry, be more playful. And so she was like a vibrational teacher, got me into a higher vibrational space until the point that I was high enough that Thoth could come into my reality without him dipping his vibration too low, which leads to when I met you.
Mm-hmm.
So October 1st, 2015, 10:01, we're at your marketing workshop.
Yeah.
At my friend's place.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting on the couch, and I don't remember dude's name with the shaved head who was speaking. Lawrence?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, yep. Lawrence. Yep. Lawrence Migliaiello.
So he was speaking. And as I'm just sitting there paying attention, this giant gold body of light shows up to the left of me very clearly. And I could tell that no one else is seeing this.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I'm seeing this with my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And it had the head of an ibis, just like Thoth,
mm-hmm.
and was just like this luminescent light. And immediately my heart knew who it was. There was an instant recognition. And I remember I pulled one of these, like...
Everybody seen this?
Yeah, like I had to like look. I remember I blinked my eyes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at him, and we were speaking telepathically. And I'm like, I'm like, yo, Thoth. I'm like, what are you doing here? He's like, keep listening. I'm like, okay. So I kept listening to Lawrence speak.
Yeah.
And as I was listening to him speak, for whatever reason, there was a part of me that was judging him.
Mm.
And I was judging him in my mind innocently, just because I noticed that as I was seeing in his mind and I was seeing through him, that he wasn't speaking from
a place of a full embodiment, or
I could, you know, at the time I saw he was speaking a little bit dry, you know, like, so this is no, but I could see he's a goofy kid inside. I could see his goofy personality. So I was judging him for not being his authentic personality.
Oh, interesting.
And in that moment, Thoth came in and he was just like, you know, there's more than one version of authenticity. He may not be embodied in his soul personality, but he's speaking from his heart and that's authentic.
Ah.
And I was just like, damn. You know, I'm like, all right, respect.
You taught me a lesson there.
Yeah. And then he was just like, we're going to be working together. And that's what began this whole channeling thing with Thoth. That was the beginning. And this happened at your workshop.
That, I mean, if you've ever had a testimonial, ladies and gentlemen, right there. I could summon spirits from ancient times. No,
don't.
I mean, wow. Amazing.
I'm going to go meet Thoth in Egypt at some point. I'm going to have to fact check this story.
Yeah.
My brother's next trip is Egypt.
So, I mean, first of all, wow. It's amazing. You know, it's not every day that you hear a story like that, first of all.
Yeah.
And I think it's what I find fascinating about it is also, it's not every day that somebody doesn't write themselves off. And what I mean by that is, like, look, I think a lot of people have these kind of like slap in the face moments or these light bulb eureka style moments where, like, all of a sudden they activate and then something happens and it feels supernatural. It feels like just like a download came in from wherever. And we use these terms, like, you know, people in a kind of spiritual context will use the term download, and somebody who's maybe more kind of left-brained is like, what are you talking about? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how do I define download in a textbook here? You know, but here's the truth. Sometimes there's just an intuition. There's this feeling that comes in that you all of a sudden are just given a piece of information, or you're privy to something, you feel something, you experience something, you see something, whatever word you want to use. Mm-hmm. And it becomes this kind of guiding force in a direction that, like, It's almost like a wind behind your back, right?
Yes.
You don't see the wind, but the wind is there.
Yep.
And you definitely feel the wind. Yep. And it definitely has an impact if you put your sails in the right direction, you want to go in that direction, and you use the wind to go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
I've had moments like that in my life multiple times over. In certain cases, I would chalk it up to, oh, well, I was high on mushrooms.
Mm.
Okay, sure. I was high on mushrooms, but everything I thought on mushrooms was still inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's all, like, everything you're experiencing, even if you're bad tripping, those are internal thoughts coming to the forefront.
Yep.
Just like in hypnotism. So the capacity of you listening to that and, like, kind of seeing that and then not just discounting that and more just leaning into it, I think is what has led you to, I mean, fully embracing it now in your career. Fully embracing it in what you're doing now.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, I think it definitely helps that most of these experiences came to me in a sober state.
Mm.
You know, because I probably might have chalked it off if I was, you know, on mush or something like that.
Yep.
Even though I've had experiences on psilocybin and ayahuasca and whatever that I'm like, no, that shit was real.
Yeah.
You know, but having it in a sober state was just it's undeniable. Like, yep. I wasn't looking for it or anything like that. And so, yeah, I guess I just had the openness to go with it. And I had this, you know, I had this support system around me. One thing that I never had to go through that I know a lot of spiritual people did have to go through is this whole thing of, like, exiting or coming out of the spiritual closet, afraid of judgment, of being weird and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I was already weird. I was a magician. I was a hypnotist, you know, and then I found spirituality and things like that. So I had no problem letting myself be weird and expressing things and owning those things, but I was also still in question of them. So I wasn't, you know, it wasn't like this is a solid fact yet. It's like, this is my process. This is my discovery. And then eventually, you know, like, I'm like, no, this shit is true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at some point it becomes, you just stop denying it.
Exactly.
It's just at some point it's like, okay, well, this is happening and it's happening over and over and over again. And it's clearly guiding me in some way, shape or form. And it's just changing you.
Absolutely.
It's just changing your perspective.
Yeah.
And in that story, it changes your perspective of like, oh, well, maybe I don't need to judge someone in this way because maybe there's other ways of being in certain moments. There's other frequencies essentially to vibrate in this case is kind of the story or the lesson you got in listening to Lawrence speak, for example.
Yep.
So how does that evolve into what you do now, right? Like, because now you're basically, I mean, if I were to just observe it purely on paper, your job is to channel.
Yes.
Day to day, like, look, if I bring up your Instagram profile, I mean, a lot of the content that you're creating, a lot of what you're sharing, a lot of what you're going out and doing is just bringing forward your truth as it's coming to you. And then allowing people to let that land or not land.
Yes.
And I mentioned earlier, right before we hit record, you know, one of the ways you came back into my field or spectrum of like thought was, number one, I saw an Instagram story, and it's always helpful. but two is I actually came across one of your posts where we were talking about, or you were talking about, sorry, labels.
Yes.
And particularly you were talking about the labels of soulmate and the label of twin flame.
Yes.
And how... Well, you broke it down really. I thought you did a really phenomenal job, and I would love to, you know, if you want to go into that a little bit, I would love for you to do that, because I think the value of what I heard was, hey, here's this label and here's this other label. I'm just going to put that there for a second. And then here's what I think or I feel sometimes we're living into and we're playing into, and then you're channeling. You're just bringing forward your perspective in a way that, man, a lot of people bring forward their perspective and they don't do it for a living. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people go in the comments and the DMs or whatever and go ham in the YouTube comments and do not do this for a living and still go to a 9-to-5 and do whatever thing. How did you kind of continuously cultivate your belief in you just kind of constantly putting this out there?
Wow. I guess it started with being surrounded by the right people. You know, I did have, around the time I met you when I was 25, you know, I was surrounded by lots of spiritual friends who were intuitives, who were channeling and this, that, and the other, who they didn't necessarily have the psychological maturity to go with their level of ability, which is a whole other topic of conversation, because sure. Just because you have psychic ability doesn't, and you could tune into these realms, doesn't mean that the information you're giving people is helpful, you know, just because there's a quote that says, the truth without love is just a lie. Mm. Alicia Keys. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times psychics will do that. They'll tell you the truth, but sometimes they even cause more separation when they're telling those truths. And so I'm very sensitive to those things. So I was surrounded by it. And I was so passionate. This is what happened. I was so passionate about spiritual gifts and abilities, because when I learned about it, I had a teacher at first and who was the catalyst to reawakening my gifts. Mm-hmm. And he had brought us, it was a class, it was an energy class, mm-hmm. in his basement, 8 people, 12 people, something like that. And he had brought us through this activation, and I have this exact activation on my YouTube channel if people want to try it, that essentially, essentially what it does is it turns on the lights of your gifts. So what it does is it goes through your body and anything that you may have numbed out as a kid because pain was too much or whatever, any senses of yours that you may have numbed out, this meditation resensitizes and re-stimulates the things that you don't know you numbed out and turns it back on. Mm. Very practical meditation. Mm-hmm. I did this one time, everything turned back on. And this is, it's on my YouTube, it's called Soul Magic, whoever wants to check it out.
We'll link it down below.
For sure. Mm-hmm. So I did that activation. And then from there, I was taught by my teacher energy mechanics. Like, how do you tune into people? How do you communicate with guides? It was a remembering and a learning at the same time. And what I most loved about it was how practical it was, right? It was a simple science. It wasn't meditate for hours on end and imagine rose-colored lights and go to the fifth dimension jargon, because like, as much as I'm spiritual and I'm mystical, I don't like fluff.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of that, as you know.
Exactly.
There's a lot of spiritual posturing, if I'll put it that way.
Perfectly said.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like fluff. I'm very anti-fluff. And so I completely understand why so many people don't believe in or don't like the idea of psychics, because there's so much fluff out there.
Yeah.
Right? So what I was taught was just the simple, practical methods of tuning into your gifts and how to use them in English in such a way I could explain it to my grandmother, right?
Nice.
This inspired me because I was just like, oh my God, I'm like, I found real magic. The whole world needs to learn this. And what I loved about it was not only you're learning real magic, but in order to tune into these gifts, you have to become a better person. You have to become more compassionate. You have to become more pure intentioned, more humble, because these are the things that raise your frequency, that puts you more in the vibrational vicinity of your gifts, because your gifts are on a light frequency.
Mm.
So as you become a better person, you get more in tune with your gifts. So as you learn real magic, you're making the world a better place. That was it for me. I was like, this is it. This is what I'm doing. This is living magic. You know, so that's how it got started. I don't remember where I was going originally with this.
I mean, my question was like, how did you turn this into your job in a sense? Oh. Like, how did this evolve into you just saying like, this is what I do?
Right.
Because at some point I turned, like I'll use the example. At one point I turned the corner and said, I tell stories for a living. That's what I do. Like, and that's a weird, that doesn't compute sometimes. Like even to myself in certain moments, I'm like, oh yeah, you're really telling stories for a living? And then yes. This is you. Anyone who's watching this, you are part of my story right now.
Yes,
you are listening to the story that I am sending you down, and not just me. I'm doing it in relationship to other storytellers.
Yes,
right. But it became my job at some point, and I don't know exactly when I crossed that threshold, but it was a progression, of course, just like what you're explaining to me. But I knew that, like, wow, there's a superpower behind it.
Yes,
I use those terms. I use the superpower terms, right? I think magic behind it is another way of saying that. It's the same thing. Of sorts.
Yeah. So that's how it started for me, was when I saw how it can change the world, when I saw how real it was, it inspired me and I just wanted to pay it forward.
Yeah.
So I started teaching classes. I started teaching other people, and that just evolved and evolved and started to evolve my gifts. And it just became me. You know, it wasn't a thought at that point. It was just so fun to channel and to receive this wisdom that I was equally as blown away with as other people.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm channeling, that's why you see, if you watch my videos, I'm often giggling at myself.
Yeah.
Because I'm having such a good time, and I'm also often blown away by the wisdom that gets to channel through. I'm like, damn, that was good. Right? It's fun.
It is. It will. Yeah. No, that's the easiest. That's a great way of putting it. Yeah. Because it's absent of thought in a sense.
Yes.
You're not, and I get what you're saying, and I, you know, to somebody who's listening to this, my goal is in this moment to try and explain to you kind of what it feels like and maybe what it doesn't feel like, mm-hmm. which is, it's not just you, when I'm telling a story or when you're channeling a particular kind of transmission of sorts, I'm not thinking about it.
Yes.
So much as I'm like staying super present, like I am right now, mm-hmm. just like, staring you in the eyes, really listening to what you have to say, and letting it just flow right through me.
Exactly.
Right? And we've heard this, some people have heard this before, like, it's not happening to you, it's not happening for you, it's happening through you.
Mm-hmm. And there's like, you.
Yeah, and there's it's very nuanced between those three kind of states, mm-hmm. if you will, mm-hmm. and they kind of look like one another, and they can masquerade as one another, and there's these levels of all of these arts, magic, hypnotism. I mean, everything to do with even spirituality. Yep. It has these kind of levels.
Yep.
In a sense, to it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's funny because like I often view spiritual gifts or intuition like martial arts.
Mm.
You know, because the psychic world or the intuitive world, whatever label you want to put, because it's still not mainstream.
Yeah.
It's not as richly explained as it could be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just see, oh, psychic is a psychic, intuitive is intuitive. But no, like, there's as many different psychics as there are martial arts. And there's white belt to black belt. You have certain past life psychics. You have medical psychics. You have, you know, higher self psychics. So there's so many different styles and so many different levels to explore. And that's what makes it super exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing that we do know for sure is we know the channeling state is real.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Whether you want to call it being in the zone, being in flow, we know the channeling state is real, and we know it's indicative of when your brain is in gamma.
Yep.
When your brain is in the gamma frequency. And most people have had the experience of, let's say they're giving advice to a loved one, and because they care and they're so in tune with their friend or whoever wanting to help, that they get this effortless flow of wisdom that they say to their friend, that they're like, their friend's like, wow, that was good. And you're like, yeah, I know, that was good.
It's like it lands like a meme all of a sudden. It's just this meme is rooming through. And I'm saying that as a joke to soften it, because it's part of that. That kind of feels like that.
Absolutely.
Because it's like almost like you're reading the meme as you said it.
Exactly.
It's you're experiencing it as it flowed literally right through you.
100%. You know, yeah. So it's like when you're just as blown away by the wisdom or the words as the other person, that's the channeling. Mm-hmm. Now, whether it comes from higher self or angels, that doesn't matter. You know, we can get into that stuff. It's just wisdom. I like to just give it, it's wisdom. Yeah. You're channeling wisdom. And so you might do that in guidance. You might do that as a cook. You know, maybe you look in the fridge and then you just know all the things come together. This is how I'm making my ingredients.
To me, that's magic.
Absolutely.
When I watch certain people like get into their zone, or like when people make art of any kind,
yep,
like, and I'm talking like art when it comes to painting on a canvas, or when people make music and they just flow and they just jam like fully, you know, effortlessly, essentially.
Yep.
People are in these states consistently.
Yes.
And if you look at athletes, right, does the athlete really think about catching the ball and running the route exactly? Are they really thinking about the placement of their feet and the way that their arms move in total perfect sync that literally makes the difference between first and second place in the Olympics, being like, you know what I mean? Like that fast, like that split second of a difference really is because we are in these weird, like, and I say weird again, it's not weird. It's not weird to me. And I'm actually kind of,
it's
doing
super
it a
natural.
It's a supernatural state. Yeah. Exactly. That's the perfect way of saying it. It's like a superpower that we all have some level of. Mm-hmm. And just some of us are like fully owning that and others are denying it.
Yeah. And you know, and I believe that that channeling state is our birthright. You know, the thing that I've spent so much time doing is teaching people channeling, because from my perspective, if you learn how to strongly connect to source, whether you want to call it source, God, the universe, I don't care. Wisdom, doesn't matter.
Yep.
When you learn how to do that, then you're good. You know, like now you know, when you have problems, you know how to tune in and get perspective. You know how to navigate yourself through life. You're in tune with your inner GPS. You know how to explore your gifts and get and have higher conversations. So that's really my aim with people is to just show them how to connect to source.
Yeah.
You know, and something I'm remembering now in the moment is, this obsession actually came to me when I was a street magician performing in college. I remember there was a moment where I was so in the zone, mm-hmm, and I was performing, and this trance state unfolded for me where suddenly it no longer felt like I was performing. It felt like I was watching myself perform.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I was so aware. It's like I knew exactly who was going to react like what and how to move like this. And it was this state of being connected to everything. And I became obsessed with that. I'm like, I want to live in that state all the time.
Yeah.
Is that possible? And that's what I do now.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I would imagine that there's moments where you're not in that state. I would imagine that there's moments, and I'm not saying fully out of the state, but there's definitely intensities to that state.
There's different volume levels, I would say.
Sure.
You know, so yeah, there's definitely like ins and outs.
Yeah.
It's few and far between where I feel like no sense of connection.
Sure.
But even when I'm in the shits and I'm going through a really hard time, I can still tune in and speak to my guides or whatever case may be, because I hold no resistance or judgment on my own feelings. So I allow for flow to continue regardless of what state I'm in.
Yeah. And you've flexed the muscle of sorts, or you've figured out the pathways that you can take to realign or readjust yourself through a particular emotion or through a particular, let's say, lower vibration or negative vibration, you know, some version of that, those words, that essentially you find your path back to home in a sense, or back to a state of homeostasis where you're like, you're just back in flow.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So like, you know, there's times, like I said, where my gifts are more quiet.
Yeah.
So like last week, or there was a period of 2 days where I just felt funny.
Yep.
You know, and it felt like my gifts were more quiet and it didn't have the same kind of flexibility to tune in, but there's an awareness, oh, there's an upgrade happening.
Yeah.
And so I surrender, I let go. Next thing, the lights are fully back on and I got new stuff.
Mm.
You know, so you start to just learn how the waves go.
Yeah.
And you surf.
Totally.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've been tuning into is I and I've very rarely explained, there's a couple of people I've explained this to. But one of the things that I've tuned into is that a lot of my energy is red. Now, I say red. What I mean by that is, so if you think about light has wavelengths, right? So red wavelengths are slow and long. They're these kind of deep. And so infrared is like unvisible to the human eye, slow, deep, long wavelengths. Mm-hmm. And the color red that we see is also these slow, deep, long wavelengths, but a little bit faster than infrared. Mm-hmm. And then when you go back up to like purple, essentially, if you follow the chakra colors or if you follow the rainbow and you go to the other spectrum, it goes faster and faster and faster. Mm-hmm. And what I've noticed, my flow state is this long term, slow, like I move more like a turtle.
Interesting.
And I move through these long-term things and I'm like, it's almost like I'm building this deep, 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 deep wave where the wave only shows up on the surface in a very long period of time.
Yep.
But that's kind of the way I move from.
That's powerful, yeah.
Yeah, and it has its downsides, like it has its upsides. Like there's huge power in it and like a tsunami comes out of nowhere sometimes in other people's reality, where in my reality it's been building forever. But there also is the downs of that where for me to like turn myself around, I find I'm in this kind of like this limbo state, or I'm in this state where I'm like waiting and waiting and waiting, and I have to be incredibly patient, which tests elements of my faith in a sense of whether or not I'm like in the right direction or whether or not I'm somehow, you know, doing the wrong thing in quote unquote, right? I've just been lucky enough to kind of like, I guess, experience it or verbalize it as red.
Yep.
Whatever that means, right? How much do you think, and this goes back to the label question, how much do you think when we put labels on these things, so I'm red now, all of a sudden I'm a long-term thinker and everything, and now I'm attaching my identity to this thing in some way, shape, or form.
Yep.
It's a mix between attaching my identity to something, but also in noticing.
Yep.
Where do you see the balance between those two things? Because they kind of feel, in moments, like opposing forces.
I would say it depends on the rigidity with which you hold to it. That's it. You know, if the idea of calling it red is useful for you and it's inspiring and it sparks certain creativity, great. But if you start rigidly holding to it to where it starts to become a limitation, that's where the mastery point is making itself apparent for you. That would be my perspective, yeah.
So I guess you would say the same of soulmate, twin flame, as an example.
Absolutely, you know. So, you know, the whole soulmate, twin flame conversation is fascinating. Because these are real energies, right? And that's what I was breaking down in my video that you were talking about, is let's just talk about the description of what this energy actually means, as opposed to soulmate is the one I'm meant to be with, or twin flame is the one I'm meant to be with, right? I'm like, let's just talk about the description of the energy.
Yeah.
You know, a soulmate is the one, is the person in your life, or the, we'll say the person, soulmate is the person in your life who helps you become your own soul's mate. That is your soulmate. That person could be your lifelong partner.
Yep.
They could be your worst enemy. They could be your friend. It could be anyone. But that is the person they help you become your soul's mate.
Yep.
Twin flame, when I look at that energy, it's the person who helps you rise in your fire, right? And again, it could be your forever person, could be your friend, could be an ex, could be anything. It is who helps you rise in your fire, who will likely not only ignite your fire in certain ways, but it will also surface
lots of discomfort,
shame, and guilt, and burn you in a certain way so you can go through that phoenix rising and transmute that into more fire.
Yeah.
Right? So that's how I just describe those energies, that without putting too much rigidity or meaning on it, or yeah, I guess meaning in the sense of like, yeah, you're meant to be with this person. It's like, this is the description.
Yeah.
But where's love leading you? That's what I care about.
Mm.
Where is love leading you? Yes, this might be your twin flame. Yes, this might be your soulmate. But who you're meant to be with depends on where you're at in your soul's evolution of love. So for some people, the highest relationship is a soulmate. That's just where they're at. And in another lifetime, it might be something different. For some people, it's twin flame. You know, it's like I had an experience, and I spoke about this on my YouTube channel, where I received a telepathic communication from my wife. Sounds crazy, but it's true. And this was a unique experience for me because I have been with the person who I would term my soulmate. I've been with the person who I would term my twin flame, and that was a super hard relationship to end.
Very fiery.
Oh my Lord.
I feel you there.
Yep. It was painful. It broke me down.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had this telepathic connection, I was at my grandparents' house, just chilling. I think I was just moving around the room, not doing anything particular. And all of a sudden, this communication came in. And it wasn't like when my spirit guides or angels talk. You know, that experience, for those who've had it, it feels very Q&A. It feels very directive, like, go left, do this. No, right?
Yeah, I get what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, this was like someone picking up a phone and calling me in my consciousness.
Mm.
It was very different. And when the contact happened, I saw her. I saw a visual of what my life, my wife looked like. Mm-hmm. Interesting Freudian slip.
make a life little bit of both, yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh, totally.
I saw a visual of her, and we started to have a conversation as if we were getting to know each other.
Yeah.
And it was, I'm like, why hasn't it worked out with the men you've been with? And she's like, oh, they weren't fun enough. I'm like, oh, interesting, cool. And she was asking me questions. And we're having this back and forth. I'm like, how is this happening? And I did remember that maybe a few weeks prior, I had done a meditation where I wanted to call in my wife, not realizing she was actually going to call me in my consciousness.
Wow.
Right? And so...
Yeah, you got real specific. You had to get real specific on that one. But you did. I mean, that's exactly what happened.
That's what happened, you know? Yeah. And so as I'm having this conversation, at one point, I tested her. I'm like, all right, let me see if I'm crazy. Let me see if she's actually who I think she is. I'm like, so let me ask you. I'm like, are you my soulmate? And she's like, nope. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm like, are you my twin flame? And she's like, nope. I'm like, all right, well then what are you? And she's just like, love.
Mm.
And I just started bawling. Because the way that it hit that heartstring, bro, it was just a moment where I'm just like, I feel that. That's truth. I don't care who believes this or not. I know this is truth.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then I asked her in that moment, I'm like, okay, cool. Like, what will it take to manifest you?
Mm.
And she's like, you have to shift your focus from women to woman.
Mm.
I was like, damn.
Wow.
Noted, and I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
And that was a very humbling moment, because it's like I couldn't. As much as I wanted to force myself into like, okay, let me just focus on women so that I can get my wife, it never works when you do something as a means to an end, right? You have to do it for yourself, not for an outcome. And I just wasn't there yet. And so it's taken me about 3 years to where I am now to get to that point where now is actually the first time in like 7 years where I'm not entangled with any woman. I'm not sleeping with anyone. I'm not in a relationship with anyone. First time in 7 years. Feels amazing. And it's tuned me into this vibration of purity. I just feel clean. I'm like, I know that if my wife were to come in tomorrow, there's nothing I have to clean up.
You're ready.
I got no pictures in my phone. I got
the gloves are white.
Everything's clean. I've done the natural evolution from women towards woman. And this is very recent. This is very recent. But yeah, that's
beautiful.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful story.
Thank you.
I've got a curiosity, and it's not an easy question to answer, I don't think, but in some ways it is. How would you describe love?
Wow. I would describe love like watering a flower. That's how I see it. And I had a moment that gave me this experience, but I had a moment where when my twin flame moved out,
mm-hmm.
she turned my house into a home. She put plants in it, decorations. It was no longer a bachelor pad.
Mm.
And so when she was moving out, she was going to take the plants. And I was just like, no, leave that. Like, it looks good, you know? And she's like, but are you going to water it? I'm like, yeah, I'll water it. She's like, make sure you water. I'm like, yeah, I promise I will. I'll do it every day, whatever you want me to do.
Yeah.
And sure enough, when she left, I was watering the plants like I'm supposed to. And then after a few weeks, there was this one plant that just started to die.
Just suffering.
And I didn't understand why. And I was, before that point, I was never a green thumb type person.
Mm-hmm.
So this plant started to die and I'm like, what's going on? So I start giving it more water, dying even more, light, dying even more. And I hit up my ex. I'm like, I don't know what's happening. I'm doing all the things. Why is it dying?
Mm.
And because now all of a sudden it's like I went into this, like, before it was just a plant, but now I was in a rescue mode because I'm like, I don't want it to die. It's like, yeah. Something happened to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, you have to connect with it too, you know? I'm like, what do you mean connect with it? And she's like, just connect to it. Talk to it. I'm like, you want me to talk to the plant? She's like, just do it. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll take your advice. So the way I did that is I gave my plants names. It allowed me to personalize them, personify.
There's one right behind me called Intimacy.
I'm sure you know exactly which one I'm talking about right now. Yeah. And so for the, I don't know if it's not on camera actually. So it's a giant.
I can arrange that.
Yeah. Well, so there's a giant, like 8 foot tall, 8.5 foot tall cactus right behind me, and I call this cactus Intimacy.
I love it.
Yeah.
So I had named the plant in question Rosie because it had these rose colored petals.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to talk to it. Now I'm like, okay, I could call you Rosie. I started to talk to it, send energy to it, and then sure enough, the very next day, all of a sudden, not only did it re-blossom, but it was healthier than it's ever been. And I was so happy. I was so happy that it was healthy and that it was blossomed and alive that I'm like, this is love. That was the moment that I'm like, this is love. Because I didn't want it to give me anything. I wasn't wanting anything from it other than its own blossom, other than its own happiness.
Wow.
And I realized in that moment, I'm like, that's what true love is. It's for me to water you. I want you in your fullest blossom. I want to just provide, and I will. And me enjoying your blossom is fulfillment for me.
Yeah,
that's
just witnessing.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you made me realize that that's exactly the experience I've had running the farm.
Mm.
You know, people. I mean, I can rationalize 1,001 reasons why owning a farm and running a farm and investing in a farm is super vital and important and financially viable and so many long-term bets that I can explain and rationalize and express 1,000 times over. And I don't think I've been running this farm for 8 years. We've done 8 seasons now.
Mm.
And I wasn't really running the whole time. Most of the time it was other people really doing it, but I started, I was there day one. Right. And I only this year would say I actually was farming. That I was actually participating in the act and the love and the dance that it is to farm.
Interesting.
Because I think that I was treating the balance between like, okay, I'm going to put this here and it's going to have this function.
Yep.
And it's going to be beautiful in this way and na-na-na. And I was learning about like companion planting, right? Like tomatoes planted next to asparagus planted next to basil do really well. And they kind of keep each other's pests away and they take different nutrients from the soil. They kind of provide nutrients to one another in so many ways. So there's companion planting that works in a very powerful way. Sometimes companion planting is just like, there's something called the Three Sisters, for example, where one of them is kind of a squash on the ground that covers the ground so it keeps it from getting dry. And then you've got corn that grows tall. So you now all of a sudden you have you know, something covering the ground, you've got corn that's growing tall, and you have beans that are kind of climbing up the corn so they all get to live in harmony with one another.
Yep.
Right. And so these I understood that logically.
Mm.
Right? Like I've heard a definition of love. Mm-hmm. I've seen representations of love through movies or stories or books, whatever, in people, right? Even watching or witnessing ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the same to witness, to understand, to read, to kind of mental process something versus to truly feel, which is kind of the second tier of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's to like, it's just, I mean, I guess the word is coming to me right now is just be.
Yep.
It's just like purely this emanation of love coursing through. That's just, I'm not planting you because you have this function. I'm not planting you because I believe your fruit is going to nourish me in this particular way. And I can understand those things, but they are all secondary. And like big time secondary compared to just, wow, I just want to witness you in your fullest expression.
Yes.
And I don't want to change you. I don't want to shape you. I don't necessarily want to do anything other than witness it. And yeah, as you grow, I'm going to be curious as to how I can support or how I can aid, how I can participate and dance alongside you in that dance.
Yeah.
And I say you because you can mean anyone or anything or anything that's living and everything is living.
Yeah.
Including this table.
Uh-huh.
And so this vibration that you put out that only really recently do I feel like I've tapped into any essence of love in any way, shape, or form.
Interesting, yeah.
That I'm now fully experiencing the two-way street that this has now created.
That's beautiful.
And so many of us are looking for this two-way street, trying to drive it down. Like we're just trying to go one way down it. Like, please just get us there. And we're searching. And like we're in a state of consumerism, because that's the world that we've kind of learned around us, where we believe that we can buy our way, try our way, find our way through something. But I don't know that it's through any of those things that we really just like be our way, just like receive and give kind of effortlessly, not even kind of effortlessly.
Yep.
With that feeling that's just in flow. It's just purely going right in and out. I don't know that I could explain it, but it is absolutely beautiful.
You know what it is too, is I remember I heard Sadhguru. He gave a definition on love where he said love is a sweetness of emotion, and I just love that description. It's the sweetness of emotion, because it really is, right? It's got a certain sweetness to it.
Yeah.
And where I think a lot of people have gone off with love is that a lot of people have defined love as self-sacrifice.
Yes, I did that forever.
So have I.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's rampant in the world where people think that love is, I'm going to do things for you at the expense of myself because I want you to be happy, which means that since I'm doing things at the expense of me, I'm being less of me. I'm only 10% of who I actually am, which means I only actually have 10% to give to you. Which isn't the fullest love you could be offering, right? For me, love is not self-sacrifice. It's self-honoring, right? You know, it's me being my fullest self and expression allows me to have more of me to give and to water you with. And so that's one of the paradigms I've been doing my best to help shift with people, is just, especially with women, you know, who have this belief that if I give everything to the man and I do everything for the man, I put everything aside for him. How come he's leaving me? How come he's cheating me? Right? Well, because you're sacrificing yourself. So you're being sacrificed.
You're playing the martyr. Exactly. One of you is the victim. One of you is the princess or the damsel in distress or the prince. And then like it's one of you just playing this role. And sometimes that switches halfway through. Sometimes you're in like this state in part of the relationship and the other state in another part of the relationship. But realistically, one of you is the martyr of sorts, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, so instead, you know, my viewpoint is I'm going to be me as fully and uniquely as I can be. And I want you to do the same, to be you as fully and uniquely as you can be. And in that experience where you feel like yourself, you feel love, right? That's where you just feel high on life. You feel happy. You're like sending appreciation letters to people that you haven't talked to in a while, right? You're in that state, you know? So this is where, you know, I always say like, your only purpose is to shine. You know, when people are looking for their purpose, I'm like, you want to know your purpose? Look at the sun. Your purpose is to shine. And as a side effect, shining meaning just being the unique you as fully as you can be, being love. As a side effect of you shining like the sun, you're going to help people. You're going to heal people. You're going to inspire. You're going to warm hearts, attract tribes as a side effect.
Yeah.
Without it being a focus point. You know, so that's how I've garnered the flow of my life. That's how what's allowed me to, I guess, be love in the ways that I am without it having to be a rigid discipline. You know, it's just natural for me. It's a bliscipline, right?
I love that word, bliscipline.
It's a bliscipline. You know, is I focus on my shine and I want you to shine. That's it. And I've learned the hard way that love is not a possession, right? I've learned the hard, like it's tough, right? It's tough when you're with an amazing person that is like you, it's one thing to be in a toxic relationship. That's really hard to let go of too. But when you're with someone, like for example, with me and my ex, I was in a 10 on 10 relationship, 10 on 10 friendship, sex, business, everything, laughter, 10 on 10. And I knew from day one, and I told her, I know that you're not my forever person.
Wow.
Because I had already had the telepathic communication, and I knew it wasn't her.
Mm.
But I knew that there was lots of growth that can happen here. So I made that clear from the beginning. I'm like, hey, this is my truth. This is what I see. This is what I feel. What do you think? Yep, I'm down. Let's go. Cool. So this allowed us to explore what love without attachment really looked like, knowing that it was one day going to end.
Yeah, actual unconditional love.
Actual unconditional love. And the letting go, that was the hard. But to let go of a 10 on 10, that took me, what, two years?
I'd say you're still doing it to some degree.
Letting go of the 10 on 10?
Yeah.
In what sense?
I feel like my sense is that there's a part of us, and I say us because I feel like I'm part of that too in some ways, is there's always a piece of you that's kind of in the process of letting something go that was so beautiful. Mm-hmm. That it's like you'll die letting it go in a way, because you're in some way once something was part of an ecosystem, it forever has an impact on the ecosystem. Even if I eradicate that piece of that ecosystem, it in the time that it was there, the weeds were there, let's say in the garden, whether it be weeds or not, right? Or this yep. plant or this flower or whatever was in that garden, it left a permanent imprint on everything else that will ever be planted in that garden ever again.
Right.
And so that's kind of what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying right. you're not over her.
Right.
I'm saying there's this like, you're beautifully forever shaped by this.
Oh, absolutely.
By this connection. And you can never get away. Like, there'll always be a part of you that has this kind of imprint.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to live as a what if.
Yeah.
But it definitely lives in some way.
Oh, yeah. When I say let go, yeah. I really mean
no
letting go of the attachments, letting go of the things that were causing suffering.
Yeah.
Not letting go of the person or the way they impacted me. Like,
yes.
She's my best friend, and I believe she'll be my best friend for life. I know in my spirit that's what I feel.
Yeah.
But I no longer spend time or mental energy on, got to move on from this or any, that's done.
Mm.
And it took a long time, so it feels real fucking good. I hope I can swear, my bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a miracle we got this far and headed this far. at least for me, I'll say. But,
Jordan, how long have we been running for?
71 minutes.
Right, I figured. I think that's really, you know, there's something profound about the way that the journey you've had. And the journey that many, I mean, we're all on some level of a hero's journey. And sometimes we're like in a hero's journey within a hero's journey within a hero's journey within a hero's journey. And that can go on until infinity, as you know. I think that there's this beautiful, there's something beautiful about someone who looks deeply at themselves, believes in magic, is brave enough to speak it, and is brave enough to show it and live it, and is brave enough to, and courageous enough to lead with it at all times.
Mm.
And I would say that you're that person in every way.
Wow. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. I
totally received that. Yeah. It gave me chills. Thank you.
Well, I think that's, if I were to kind of even map the arc of the, you know, where we started this podcast, which is telling a little bit of your story and where the, you know, how you got into magic and how you got into all these things. But where you're at today, and I think what people are experiencing on the other side of what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
is not just your words,
mm.
right? It's like, mm-hmm. your words are part of it,
yep.
but it's the presence that you bring with it. It's the embodiment that you have. It's the, like, it's just the vibration, like you said, or mm-hmm. the light that is just kind of shining through that people just feel.
Yeah.
And I'll speak for myself in this, which is I've spent an enormous amount of time burning what I would consider to be like a non-renewable energy source, essentially taking darkness and burning that to the point where it creates light.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
It works. It's like the version of trickery and magic.
Yep.
It's exactly that.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's one way that I can make you wow.
Yep.
And I feel like I made this leap, almost skipping the second phase, which is like, okay, like maybe you have a hybrid between a renewable energy, but also some of this other energy. Let's say that's phase two. And then phase three is, let's say, is just this pure childlike energy where I'm just like, I'm fully in belief of love and magic. And like, I've just, it's like I've found my religion again.
Yes.
And I say religion without any dogma around any specific practice or any specific nuance or story that is in the past or in the future that comes with any of those components. Mm-hmm. It is an internal process that you get to decide and live and emanate the magic that you see in the world. And it is a reflection of you and of your belief, because the more you truly believe it, the more you literally live it. And the more you see it in even the bad things, even the slaps in the face or the taps on the wrist or the moments where it's like you can crumble in fear or you can crumble into not enoughness. You can cede to the anxiety or the stress or whatever version. And all of those things are reasonable.
Yeah.
They're reasonable. Mm-hmm. And I've spent an enormous amount of time reasoning with them many times over. And I just still choose that it's beautiful.
Absolutely, man. You know, it's from my perspective, magic is the nature of existence. Mm. Right? Think about it. Like, magic really is the nature of existence itself. We're all magic expressing ourselves in human form. You know, and so for me, honestly, to not believe in magic is to not believe in yourself. Mm. Because on some level, you're a magical being.
Indeed.
Right? So, yeah.
Well, David Lyon, you are a magical being. I really appreciate you taking the time to have this podcast, this chat. It's amazing how fast these things go. I feel like I entered this vortex, this zone, and all of a sudden there's this magical two-way street that is transpiring. Anything you want to leave anybody off with, any links or anything like that, you know where the links are, ladies and gentlemen. But anything that's just on your heart, in your soul, channeling through you right here, right now, that you feel people might need to hear?
Well, first I'll just say, you know, for anyone who might be needing support with their inner world, you know, with the emotions and stuff that comes up with the spiritual confusions, I would love to lead them to my YouTube channel and my Instagram. That's a big part of what I love to help people with, is to make those inner journeys more easy and more fun, because it doesn't have to be so serious and heavy. So I'd love to just offer that support to whoever might be needing it or looking for it. And in terms of message for the audience, man, it sounds as cliche as it is to say, I just want to say, choose to be yourself. Just choose to be yourself. Just choose to live your truth, because that's how you experience the magic of life. If you don't choose to embody your inner truth and to live your truth, how can you experience the truth of magic, the truth of life? You know, so that's the path of a mystic, right? It's living your truth, especially when it contradicts other people's truths. And so I guess just choose to be yourself. I'm going to give you that cliche message.
Love it. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you in the next episode. You know where to hit the buttons. You know where to find the links.